The significance of the butterfly meeting has kind of changed. The last 2 years we have had this conference down at Callaway, and after we completed the meeting we all went to the Butterfly Conservatory at Callaway, and we can't do that today. That's the one thing that I think is less here. But we can celebrate our transformation, and I know for me, I truly am not the same person that I was when I came into the doors of Al-Anon. I don't think there's anything about me that's the same, except maybe generally how I look. This process of working these steps and allowing them to transform our life is unbelievable. I will tell you, you know, there's the legend of the butterfly being a symbol of Al-Anon, and you know, I have two sponsors in my life right now, Ruth F. and Linda, and I'm very grateful Linda's here with me today. Ruth has been my sponsor for a long time. She's been very ill. If you know her, please keep her in your prayers. But Ruth was a Panel 8 delegate, and she was at the Al-Anon conference when they voted on the Al-Anon symbol. They had three choices. There were the butterfly people, and there were the people that were in favor of the triangle with a circle in it, and there was another contingent that wanted a coffee cup. And so Ruth actually, several years ago, gave me her prototype for the coffee cup symbol, if that had been our symbol. But she was definitely a butterfly person. And what happened is that the symbol we have today, the triangle with a circle in it, became what is officially known as Al-Anon symbol. But up until that time, butterfly was kind of what Al-Anon was known for, up until the time that it was voted to be the triangle with a circle in it. And Ruth put away her butterflies for a few years, but she pulled them back out not too long ago, and so that's the other meaning of the butterfly meeting, is that's the early days, at least for my sponsor, that was the symbol for Al-Anon. So I have there are three of us. I have two other lovely ladies with me today, Bernadette and Linda, and I am going to let one of them go first, whichever one wants to.
Go ahead, Linda.
Okay. Good morning, everyone. My name is Linda Bazans, and I'm a very grateful member of the Al-Anon Family Group.
Hi, Linda.
I'm from St. Paul, Minnesota. We don't want to get too close, do we? I'm from St. Paul, Minnesota, and it's just a privilege to be in your lovely state. Thank you, Barbara. Thank you, Dick. Sonia, that was incredible. What a nice way to start this meeting. When I read it, the topic, what part of this program is spiritual, I actually thought that was sort of a trick question, because in my opinion, the whole program is spiritual. I'm a planner, so I started to think about what that meant to me. And I went back to my childhood, and as a young girl, I think I discovered very quickly, maybe up to the age of like 10, that no matter what I tried to do, it never sort of filled the need I had of a spirituality inside of me. It started off, I think, with Christmas. You know how when you have all these expectations around Christmas, it's hyped and it's a big deal, and you know what you want, and people ask you what you want, and or at least I was fortunate enough that they asked me. And then Christmas Day came, and you got your gift, and it was never what I wanted. It was close, but it was never what I wanted. And then I remember, I was probably about the age of 10. I think I got maybe 12. I got a quarter for an allowance, and there was this purse. It was a leather wallet, and it was pink, and it was perfect. It had all the slots that I could put my friends' pictures in. It was the perfect purse, and it was pink leather. And I knew that was what I needed. I needed that purse. And so I saved a quarter, you know, a week for a long time till I got that purse, and it was something like $6 or $7. And I got that purse, and it was just perfect for about a week. Maybe it was a perfect purse for 2 weeks. But it wasn't it. And I remember thinking, I guess it's not about purses. But then I found another something, and then of course I knew that would be the thing that would be it. But that was an awareness that became important to me later on. So as I progress and get older and find the person that I think is going to be the perfect person to marry, we got married. And for a long time, I really felt that I was in control. And as long as I was in control, things were okay. And so I don't think I had the tremendous need for a spiritual being in my life. But we had alcoholism in our family, and that perfect person was doing the best he could do. But he wasn't well, and he was struggling. He had his own demons. But I was still pretty much putting it all together and making it perfect, and as long as I was making it perfect, I didn't really need God, I guess. But little by slowly, things started falling apart, and I wasn't able to keep it together, and I wasn't able to make it feel okay. And my need for God became greater, but I didn't know that that's what it was. And I always had a relationship with God. I was raised in a religion, and I really felt very close to God. And yet during this period when I was struggling so hard, I really wasn't very close to God because I was still thinking I could make it happen. That went on for about 7 years in our marriage, and during that time we had 2 kids. And I was doing everything. I'm going to Al-Anon. I'm a member of Al-Anon, but I'm only going to look good. And I really thought if Bob would behave, I would be okay. And he was sober, and he was doing the best he was doing, and I was going to Al-Anon. But you see, I wasn't working the steps. I was just going to look good. And I got sick, and I got sicker, and I got sad, and I got sadder. And I became more desperate. And I've heard so many people talk about, you know, being given the gift of desperation. And I was given the gift of desperation. But I also needed the gift of clarity. And I had the desperation, but I didn't know how it all fit together. And as I started taking the steps and really surrendering my life and stopped making my alcoholic my higher power, and that's what I was doing. If he were okay, I knew I'd be okay. And he was getting to be much better, and I was falling apart. I was not okay. And through working the steps, I looked at my own unmanageability and my own powerlessness, and I looked at my own insanity. And then I got to step 3, and I had to make a decision, and that was to turn my life over to God. And I had to think about God. I had to think about the spiritual part of my being. And I remembered the story about the purse and the Christmas. And all of a sudden, and I love the word all of a sudden, because all of a sudden took me about 30 years. but we say all of a sudden because it becomes different. And I thought, it's about this connection. I've had the connection, but I had it as a child, and it needed to grow. And it needed to become a connection that was viable for a, whatever I was, 30-year-old woman with 2 children. And so I started to really do a different kind of search. And I started to turn to that higher power when I was in trouble. You see, when I thought I was managing it, I didn't need to turn to anything because I've got this handled, thank you. You know, it's not real easy, but when the children are little and you make all the decisions for them, you feel like you're in control. It's one more illusion, but you still feel that way. And then they start to assert their own will and their own ego, and you don't necessarily agree. And that continues, and you agree less and less. And you start to see your powerlessness, and you start to see your insanity, and you start to see your need for a God. So as my life has progressed, my need for God has become greater. It's changed. My definition of God, I hope, has grown. But I don't know how I could do anything today without having a connection. Sometimes my days have a real strong connection, and sometimes it's much more vital. And then there are other days when I forget a little bit, and I don't have the same connection, but I always have a connection. So what part of this program is spiritual? If you're really lucky, the whole thing. If you're really lucky, and I have been many times, you have an experience of a higher power. And once you have the experience, I don't think you can deny it. And then when you have it the second time and the third time, you start to go, aha. It's not about me. It's about being of service to my Father, to my God, to whatever name you call your higher power. And the more I'm of service, the better I am. I say the third step prayer every morning before I get out of bed. And, you know, take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. And as all of us, we have a lot of difficulties. And I want to be a person who really bears witness more often. We've been in trouble financially because of the way the tsunami has hit the world and because of our own greed. And our higher power is helping us walk out of that. And I want to tell you, I don't know how I could have done it without the awareness that I was not having to do it alone. And there were days when I forgot, and there were a lot of nights when I forgot, when I couldn't sleep because I was worried and trying to figure it out. And of course, I wanted it in my own time, and I wanted it to look like I wanted it to look. And that isn't the way it happens. But I have to remember, and the only way I remember is to struggle. I struggle, and then all of a sudden, that word again, I go, yeah, it's not about me, it's about you. And if I can be of service, and I can show up, and I can be who I'm supposed to be in the day, and that's to be of help, I'm not alone. This whole program is based on spirituality. And the lucky ones of us are the ones who've had some experience of a higher power and can then start to rely on that. And we are truly the blessed ones. And then our job is to go out and be a blessing and to help others. But to continue to remember, which is what I sometimes forget, that each day is a gift and that I'm supposed to help others in that day. So what part of this program is spiritual? From the first step to the 12th step, from the beginning of the day to the end of the day. And I am so grateful I've had that experience that lets me know that. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Bernadette, and I'm a grateful member of the Worldwide Fellowship of Al-Anon and Alateen Family Groups. Good morning. Good morning. It's good to be here. It's good to be anywhere, actually. I wasn't married to Bill that long before he came into AA. You know, people will say, well, you only lived 7 years of it, you know, and then it came into AA. Well, I think we went down far enough at that time that I don't know how much further we could have gone. And funny how people do help you in your life, but the only person I ever remember really helping me at that time was my mother, and it was always with this spiritual prayer she would come out with, you know. Her whole life was spiritual. And once he came into the program, I thought, well, now he has it, but what about me? What about me? What do I get out of this? And I did ask his sponsor, you know, when do I do something? And that's when he told me, wait until you're asked. And I must admit, Bill and I don't do our programs together. I think my program is mine and his program is his. We work with different people. I love AA people. I love having them over. I love going to the meetings. I go to a lot of AA meetings. But, you know, and a lot of Al-Anon meetings, even now, after all these years, I learn. And I did want to touch on when you talked about wanting something for Christmas. Truly, there's only one time in my life I ever remember wanting something. And this is when I was about 7 years old. And it was going to be Christmas, and I know I needed a coat. We never had a lot of money in the house. My father was still alive. And they brought me out, and my sisters and my mom, and got me this great coat. You know, it was wool, and it had a velvet sort of maroon, magenta collar, and it had a hat that matched. And they said, well, you can have the coat. My mother said this, but we can't afford the hat. I did not know that it came as a set, you know. So anyway, she said, you can't have the hat. You just can't have it. We'll wear something you have at home, you know, with the coat. So come Christmas Day or Christmas Eve, we always opened it. We went to midnight mass and opened our little presents. And there was the hat. It was the best Christmas I could ever remember. I didn't care about anything else that happened, but this hat was it. I think I have a picture of it still at home, not of the hat, but of me in the hat. But, I mean, that was a good thing. Then came, I don't remember having very, very many tough decisions to make during my life, you know. Maybe it's because I didn't have a father. I really don't know, you know, because he was certainly very strict. But my mother wasn't that easy either. But I really don't remember having that many problems in life until I married an alcoholic, and then something happened. Something happened, you know. I didn't seem as sure of myself. I didn't feel like I'd do anything really right. But maybe that's why I took such good care of the kids. I loved having them. I still love having them in my life, you know. And they know that Al-Anon and AA are a big part of our life, and they have always, our oldest was 5 when Bill came into the program. None of them have gone to any of the programs. They go to our meetings and they listen to us talk, but they've never gone to any program. I think they've gotten it through us. And the only way I could keep my spirituality fresh was to keep meeting with the people that gave it to me to begin with. You know, I saw what my husband was doing, and then I followed my book. When I came into the program, this book was not even out. I think it came out in 72, if I'm not mistaken, and I came in 62. But then we left New York after a few months. Bill asked his sponsor, and his sponsor told him it would be a good thing as long as AA and Al-Anon were there, and that was where I really grew in Al-Anon. But it was hard to do all the steps. I couldn't get past that third step, and I never met Lois at that time. She was a name. She didn't mean anything to me at that time, really. I didn't hear much about her. And the program was still new in 62, really. It wasn't that widespread. I had never heard it on the radio or television. And I came back to New York, and that was when I met her. And it was an eye-opener. She lived a very simple life. Jack was just telling me the other day that he, for the first time, he went to Stepping Stones, and Bill and I have been there a lot, but it was fun listening to him talk about the excitement that's there, just walking in and seeing everything, how, with a feeling that you get for it. And I remember that I wrote a letter to Lois once telling her how I felt after being out with lunch and being with friends, but mainly talking to her. She was a very strong person, and she was really a model for me now at this time, since I didn't have my mother anymore. She was very strong. She knew what she wanted, and she told you when she was upset, and I appreciated that a lot. I spent a weekend with her once, and she said to me, "Why don't you go to church? I think I need a little quiet time." I said, "Okay." All right. So in between knitting, I went to church. You know, she knitted. She was a very accomplished woman, too. But Al-Anon has done for me, I can't even imagine. But I do have a book, and it happened to be this page in the book of Al-Anon. Al-Anon faces one day at a time, one of our readers. And it happens to be today's reading. So if you don't mind, I'd like to read it. I think it's very apropos for what I'm thinking. When we're at a meeting, the Al-Anon ideas seem so clear to us that we never doubt we can apply them to our daily living. But alas, the old thinking pattern takes over, and we have what corresponds to an AA slip or a relapse. This is no reason to be discouraged. If I look back on my pre-Al-Anon attitude, I can see how much I have learned and how much of it I do remember to use in dealing with my everyday problems. Perfect mastery is too much for me to expect of myself. I will be patient. Today's reminder, it isn't easy for me to see myself as others see me and recognize how much progress I have made. All I need to do is to observe the improvement in the others in my group. Even some that appear to have hopeless problems make great strides in learning to detach from many of the harrowing episodes in alcoholism, and there are many. They recognize that their thinking and their actions were not always sane either. They use the Al-Anon program to restore themselves to a reasonable and serene frame of mind. Quote, Al-Anon doesn't produce miracles overnight, but when we look back, we realize that a miracle is in the process of taking place. And I think that happened from this first day I walked into Al-Anon, and I heard the things I heard. You know, that first of all, I was sicker than he was. I heard that it was a disease. That was one of the first things I heard. And I had never heard that before. And then alcoholism. And then I heard that everybody was suffering in one way or another. It didn't matter who they were, what they wore, what they believed. It didn't matter. One time somebody said to Lois at a conference, tell me, what part of the program is spiritual? And she said, well, the whole program is spiritual. If you do the steps, everything you read is spiritual about it. It seems to me that Bill and Dr. Bob were just ordinary people. Just ordinary people. And somehow it came to him, to them. I'm sure they didn't realize at the time, and I didn't when I first read it. It came to them from a higher power, whom I choose to call God, that they would start this. Who could think that two people could just meet and talk, and that was the answer? It's so simple, you can't get people to believe it now. You can't get them to understand it now. And how I came out of my shell, that I speak at all, is amazing. You know, being one of 12, you didn't get much of a chance to speak, you know. So, but it really is a miracle. And I think that, yes, everything is spiritual. I don't, you know, all this stuff about letting go of the Lord's Prayer and all that other, which is so controversial. Somebody said this morning, maybe it was you, Jack, if it's not broke, why fix it? Why do we have to fix anything? The program is great as it is, and I don't care how many computers come out or how smart anybody is. It's what it is, and that's what we got. And I'm not going to any group that doesn't do what the books tell us to do. You know, I've read the big book. I love it. I love my Al-Anon books. I have all of them. I love these books. And even if I just meet you, I love you. Why? Because we have a connection. We have a connection that has been given to us that isn't given to many people. And what do they say? Many are called, but only a few of us are chosen. And aren't we lucky if we're to make that choice? So I want to read this little thing, and then I'll turn it over to Barbara. Just when the caterpillar thought the world was over, which was me most of the time, it became a butterfly. Thank you.
I kind of came into, I am Barbara Anderson, very grateful Al-Anon.
Hi, Barbara.
I kind of came into Al-Anon backwards. I was in a relationship with a recovering alcoholic, and he told me he would not marry anybody unless they were an Al-Anon. So I went to Al-Anon to manipulate him into marrying me, and it worked. So Al-Anon worked me. I didn't work it for a while. I came to believe, truly, you know, that we talk about. My life was littered with alcoholism. You know, three of my four grandparents, my mother's mother and father, and probably her. My dad was the baby of 14. Would have gotten along with you, Bernadette. And well over half of them were alcoholic. He came from a long line of moonshiners as well. So I certainly qualified. And almost every relationship I had been in was with either somebody who was actively alcoholic or who was a child of an alcoholic. But I didn't see any of that. You know, from survival to recovery, growing up in an alcoholic home, one of our Al-Anon books, it says adult children of alcoholics have an abnormal sense of what our reality is. We think our life is like everybody else's. So I didn't recognize I had a problem. Now, spiritually, when I came into the program, I would have told you I already had the spiritual program because I went to seminary. And I'm not going to tell you my whole story today, but, you know, there was Joan of Arc and Barbara the Baptist, and, you know, I was going to go out and save the world. And I went to seminary. I learned what I, you know, everything I thought God was supposed to be at the time. But, you know, when I got to Al-Anon, I realized how wounded I was. And it took me a while to realize how wounded I was. When I came into this room, I was spiritually bankrupt. I was physically ill. I had ulcers. I had intestinal problems. I had an active eating disorder. I was suicidal half the time. But I always had a smile on my face, and I was there to help everybody. For the family member, I think sometimes alcoholism is like a slow poison that slowly eats us alive from the inside out. And I'm trying to remember the quote. Remind me. Resentment is like drinking poison, you know, and waiting for you to die. You know, there's so many times in my life that I intellectually knew what God was supposed to be, but God wasn't real to me. And I graduated from seminary the year that the denomination I had chosen to serve decided that they didn't want women. And the exact way it was written was, Eve was the first to sin, therefore women shouldn't lead over men, and women in ministry would be strongly discouraged. So I couldn't find a job, and I was the president of the music school, and I had worked in churches for 7 years, and I went to all these interviews, and I'll tell you about one of them, and some of you've heard it before, but I walked into this room, and there was 50 chairs in a circle, and all I remember is the church was in Alabama. I don't remember the name of the church. I have brownouts. Alcoholics may have blackouts. I have brownouts. I just kind of like, if I resented something too much, it just kind of ceased to exist. So I don't remember the town. I don't remember the name of the church. But I walked into the middle of this big circle, and there was a chair in the middle. And right across from me, there was a man who said, we just wanted to see what someone like you, a woman, who would have the audacity to apply for this job would look like. That's all. And I had driven from Louisville, Kentucky to this little church in Alabama for that. I didn't know what to say. Now I've thought of a lot of things since then. But the words that came out of my mouth were, well, I hope you're going to pay my expenses. And from this part of the circle, a man threw some money on the floor. And I picked up the money, and I walked out of the circle, and that had become God to me. And I didn't realize it at the time. You know, I had all this I was carrying around with me and tried to audit the course of Al-Anon. And I assumed I had already taken the second and third step because I went to seminary. But that's the kind of stuff I was carrying around with me. Dick alluded to it last night. We went to the International in Montreal. And he was so excited. We got on this plane, and there was probably 100 people on the plane. Somebody made an announcement, any friends of Bill W. on the plane, and there were 100 people raised their hand. And I could imagine what he was like when he was table hopping, because he was bouncing all over the plane talking to people. And I have never felt more alone. And so I watched him. We checked in to the International. We had our badges. People were hugging us. And I don't know if any of you have seen a new Al-Anon, and they're just not quite ready to be touched. That's kind of where I was. And so people would come over and hug me, and I wasn't really even sure I could receive a hug. That's how unlovable I felt. And that night, we got to the hotel, and, you know, I had done a lot of things to try to manipulate Dick, and Dick had been in a lot of meetings like this. He'd listened to a lot of Al-Anons, you know, and listened to a lot of Al-Anons talk about what we're like and how we try to manipulate. And nothing I did ever worked, you know. So I went into the bathroom, and I came out with a razor in my hand. I said, I think I'm going to kill myself. Now, I was that depressed. I felt that hopeless. But as he alluded to last night, he started laughing at me, and I punched him in the belly. You know, I don't think I would hurt him very much. I wasn't very strong. And then I just broke, and he said, honey, you know, if there's ever a time for you to join Al-Anon for you, it might be here. You're at the International Convention. And the next meeting I went to was the opening of Al-Anon's first International Convention. Held in conjunction with AA's International in Montreal, and the opening speaker was Lois. And she got up and she started talking. She talked about our big three A's, Alcoholics Anonymous, Al-Anon, and Alateen, and the family program that we have, and that's part of what we've tried to create here at A Woodstock of the South, is to really have Al-Anon and AA be a part of a family as much as we can here. But she said she was tired of people talking about the spiritual side of this program, that it was a spiritual program. It was a transforming way of life. We never had to be the same again. And I heard that. And I finally took the first step in Montreal. To really find a spiritual program for me, you know, I loved speaker meetings from the very start. I would hear, and I tried to qualify for AA. I didn't do very well. You can ask Dick about that. And because y'all seemed like you had so much more fun, and I loved AA speaker meetings. I just had so much fun, and I believed there was a power greater than me that could restore you to sanity, because I saw it, I heard it, you know. And you looked a whole lot better than the alcoholics I had that were active in my life. But I wasn't sure that power cared about me. And my sponsor had me keep a God journal. Write down anything that was beyond human understanding that happened in my life. And it might be a sunrise. It might be a sunset. It might be a flower. It might be your laughter, it might be a hug when I needed it, it might be the money I needed to pay a bill when I didn't think it was coming. I just started collecting those things. It might be your miracle, you know. There were a lot of things that were other people's miracles that were in my book. But I slowly began to believe that there was a power greater than me. It was separate from all that theological studies that I had done at seminary. This was practical reality. This was visible evidences of God in people's lives and me trying to begin to see it in my own. And Dick and I had a period with a lot of financial trouble. And we got to a point, we were both very active in service. I was the district representative for my district. And I was unable to ask for help, but we got to a point that we didn't have money for food. And I didn't think that people in sobriety would have that problem. And I didn't know how to ask for help. And I got down on my knees with my dog, Booger Bear. Booger Bear would pray with me. He put his head on the bed when I would pray. If you've ever looked at the word dog in the mirror, it's God. And I learned a lot about unconditional love from my dog. But I prayed and I asked God for help. And I said, I don't know if you're hearing me. I wasn't really sure. I really honestly didn't believe that God wanted me. You know, it finally hit me. So all those things that had happened. I thought God wanted you, God loved you, but I wasn't sure God loved me. So I asked for help. And 2 hours later, there was a knock on my front door. And I went to the door, and there was a friend that I hadn't talked to in a fairly long time, standing there with 8 bags of groceries. And that's what it took for me to take the second and third step. You know, God delivered me groceries. You know, that was my burning bush. You know, everybody has something, and that was mine. A dramatic, you know, answer to prayer. And there were many things after that. This program began to transform me as I worked through the steps. And I began to let go of fear, and I began to let go of resentment, and I began to let go of all the low self-esteem I carried around with me for so long. And I began to learn who I was. You know, I talked to my parents. I learned about where they came from. I learned about the alcoholism that they lived in. And I began to make amends. You know, I began to let go of self-centered pride and tell people who I really was. I remember during that time I was that we were so broke, a friend gave me their old drunk car. And this was not a pretty vehicle. It was kind of the color of that the green and that rug down there. And it was it had rusted into the hood, Judy Loves Donnie. Okay. And the back taillights were both broken out, and there was reflective tape taped over them so you wouldn't get arrested. And the air conditioning didn't work, and the headliner was falling down. And so I rode with the windows down, and the glue from the on top of the headliner would blow out the back. Okay, and people could see me coming down the road. And I was so ashamed of this car that I would park it a couple blocks away when I went to meetings. But you know, the day that I pulled the car in that parking lot, things started to change. So many things have happened in my life in the last, particularly since 2001, when Dick almost died the first time. He's had two fatal illnesses. I tell him he's a cat. I'm not sure how many lives he burned out in alcoholism, but you know, hopefully he's got a couple left. And but we. You know, I think that I've discovered that the worst things that happen in our life, God spins into gold to help somebody else. And that's, you know, that's been true for me. And beginning to look at what gift God had for me today as opposed to everything that wasn't going right. You know, beginning to look with life truly with a new pair of glasses, as Chuck talked about. You know, if I look at life as a gift, and God's going to give me a gift today, even when things aren't going all that well. If I have that vision in my life to see the gift rather than to see the curse, it's a whole different way of living. It's a spiritual transforming way of living. You know, this year, and the reason I wanted to start the meeting thinking about Tony is a little over a year ago, after being challenged by an Al-Anon friend in West Virginia, actually, a year and a half ago, I had two different people who wanted me to be with them when they pulled life support on an alcoholic relative. They were both active, and alcoholism had taken their lives. And the third one was an Al-Anon friend of mine was going to have surgery at Shepherd Spinal Center, his brother. And he called me and asked me if I would go and do communion with him. And I said, Booth, I'm not an ordained minister. You know, I went to seminary, that's all. And he said, I know, but I don't care. Go get a loaf of bread and some grape juice and go see my brother. And so I did that. And he also said, by the way, why aren't you ordained? Some church will ordain you. So that sat in the back of my brain, and I talked to Tony about it, and I talked to several people about it, and I found a church that would ordain me. So I was ordained a little over a year ago. I didn't know why. I just did it. I don't have a full-time church. Well, one of my sponsees died this year. Her name was Karen. A number of y'all knew her. And the family asked me to do the service. And I was terrified. You know, I'd never done anything like that. I was a music and youth minister. I did youth counseling. I did campouts. You know, I didn't do funerals. So, but I said yes. I knew there was a reason, you know, that God chose all this path. And so I was praying, and God sends me a lot of gifts through nature. I've seen the monarch butterfly migration twice. I've seen dolphins celebrate the end of the day. I've, you know, there's so many gifts I've gotten in the middle of nature. But when I was getting ready to do my friend Karen's service, I was looking out at the lake that my husband and I live on, and a hawk landed on the banister and just stared at me. Now, I understand hawks don't do this, and just stared at me. It was almost 5 minutes. I was sobbing by the end of it. And I thought, what, you know, what is this? And I, whether it was the spirit of my sponsee Karen or whether she sent the hawk or whatever, I know that it was a spiritual gift. And so I went, looked up on the internet. I'm a great Googler. And I put in spiritual meaning hawk, and I found that the Native American meaning of a hawk is they're a messenger of God, encouraging us to rise over the earthly plane and seeing our lives from a new perspective. That same transformation that we talk about with the butterfly. And so I thought, okay, we're supposed to see death from a new perspective. And so that's what I talked about with the service. And for at least 2 months in a row, I saw a hawk every day. I still see him a lot. One day I saw 54 in one day. Now, so my God is not subtle, okay? I was supposed to see my, I was supposed to continue to see my life from a new perspective and to tell other people to do that too. I mean, I really truly believe that was part of the gift. I was out for work. I was out in Arizona this year, and I ended up through a series of circumstances in a morning meditation with a shaman. And after it was over, I talked to the shaman and told him about this hawk, and he said, I never deny gifts of God. You know, that was definitely a gift of God, and you have a message to share, you know. That's transformational process of these steps allow us to see our lives in a new perspective. After doing my friend Karen's funeral, I did two more. The second one I did was Tony Curry's. And when the family called me about that one, I thought, oh my God, I didn't have no way of imagining that I would ever officiate the funeral for my professional mentor in the addiction field. And when I got the call from Tony W., asking me to do it, I was at the beach for work. And I walked along the beach that day, and I was praying. And I found a shell, and I wrote in the sand, Tony and Karen. I wrote both of their names. And the waves finally came. I wrote it pretty high. The waves came and washed their names away. And a hawk flew over my head. At the beach. I was with a girlfriend. You can call her. It happened. And, you know, it was the most amazing thing. You know, it was the most amazing thing. Again, it was an answer. Oh, Barbara, you're doing the funeral. Okay, so this spiritual life that we have, this adventure that we're on, that we can have through working the steps is beyond anything ever imagined. in the, you know, going, I feel like a very much a newcomer compared to my two friends that are up here with me today. But I'm in my 28th year. And, you know, what I can tell you is that I've seen a lot of people come and go from Al-Anon in that period of time. And most of them never really jump in and work the steps. They never really have the process of having that spiritual transformation happen in their life. They never see life from a new perspective. You know, those of you that are in AA that are here, that have family members that you would love to be in this meeting, or you used to fear that they would come here. You know, the reality is that, you know, we can get better too. You know, our lives can change dramatically if we're willing to do the work. And too many people come here unwilling to do the work. AA or Al-Anon, you know. I would say jump in, the water's warm. You know, the takeoff on the transformational flight of the butterfly that Sonia started our meeting talking about. And be willing to change. Either one of you have something else you'd like to share?
No. Thank you.
Anyone have a question for anybody up here today? How much time's on the tape, Lee?
A lot.
A lot? Okay. Anybody have something you'd like to share?
I'm Bill Roof. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Bill.
Hi, Bill.
Hi, Bill.
I was thinking when I first got exposed.
Come up here.
Come right up here.
We want you on the tape, Bill.
Pardon me? I
want to come up the tape.
Wow! I didn't know you were here. I'm Bill Roop. I'm an alcoholic. My heroes are all in the front row. I tell you what, when I came in AA, Al-Anons were really important because when we had an eating meeting, they brought the food. And we didn't allow them to talk. Times have sure changed. For the better. We didn't know it was a family disease then. We thought it was just a guy's disease, or a girl, if that was the deal. And the girls and the Al-Anons were sort of put in the background. They were nice, but that's about it. And I'll tell you where I got my metamorphosis was from Don Willis's wife, Charlene. I was head of committee in some roundup, and I asked Charlene, would she like to be on the roundup committee? But I said, of course, you don't get a vote. She said, Bill, why would I want to be on anything where I didn't get a vote? Would you? And that was my metamorphosis. Why would anybody be second rate? You people aren't. It's just at the beginning. Lois thought she was a big deal. I don't think Bill thought she was that big a deal. She didn't let her write the chapter, you know. In other words, this was a common thing. It isn't anymore. That was before the hawk started circling your head, you know. We all have our hawks if we look for them. The spiritual life's not a theory. It's changed my life. I was a person that came in suicidal. I was a loser. Today I'm a winner. I grew up in an Irish Catholic neighborhood. Irish Catholic neighborhood. Those people look down on anybody that's an Irish Catholic. And I was a Baptist. I really was. But I played basketball and baseball, so they accepted me. And now I'm accepted everywhere. Sometimes I just can't believe that God's done this for me as well as for you. But be grateful you're here. And I'll say one thing. If you like it here, you're blessed. Because a lot of people that don't stay, they don't like it here. I've liked it since the day I came in. And God came back in my life. Rope without God is not much. Rope with God will love you and be with you. Thank you.
Anybody else?
I'm Nancy, and I'm an alcoholic.
Nancy.
Part of me is my family instructed me to come to AA because they thought I had a problem. I didn't think I did, but they felt I did. And so I joined AA, and it's become my life. I love it. I love everything about it. And I've asked my husband to do Al-Anon, and of course he doesn't need it. He knows everything there is to know about alcoholism, and it's my problem and not his. I've been in the program 20 months, but my thought is part of me doesn't want him to do Al-Anon. I don't know if it's because I just want to get better and not worry about him or not work on our relationship, or I don't really know what it is. And then part of me thinks maybe I need Al-Anon also. And I guess I'm just kind of wondering your thoughts on that.
Thank you. I can say for myself, and I'll let them share as well. Dick and I would not be married if we were not both in the program. Myself and my own issues and to find my own growth and him to be able to do his own was critical for us to be able to be in our 28th year of marriage. And I am incredibly grateful that his sponsor recommended long ago that he not marry anybody unless they were in the program, and that he said that to me. It made all the difference. I know I know a lot of alcoholics that are scared of their family members being in Al-Anon, that, you know, we might not enable you anymore, or we might, you know, challenge some. I think that's the biggest thing. I also know a lot of people. You know, I was at a conference once, and I overheard this conversation with this man and his sponsee. And the man was asking his sponsor, you know, should my wife and I go to this Al-Anon session? He said, oh, no, you don't want your wife in Al-Anon. She'll make your life miserable. And so the sponsee walked away. You know, I'm not completely well. And so I went over and talked to the sponsor. And I said, I'm just curious, you know, why you told them that. And he said, well, my wife went to 3 meetings and she divorced me. And I said, if somebody went to 3 AA meetings, would you consider them an active member of AA? And he said, well, no way. And I said, your wife wasn't in Al-Anon. She visited a few meetings, you know. We talked for a little while, and he went and got his sponsee, and his sponsee and sponsee's wife, and he all came to the meeting, you know. A couple weekends ago, I was at a conference, and there was a man who told me he'd been around Al-Anon for 40 years. Now, I didn't ask him how around that was. You know, I didn't ask him how many times he'd been in and out and ask him that question. And he said that he had 2 sons there, and he had always kept himself apart from them. You know, he was there because they were both on the host committee. They were really, really nice men. One of them was over 5 years sober. One of them was over 8 years sober. And he said, I've just never been able to open myself back up and let them back into my life because they might not stay sober. And I said, well, you know, you never know. But think about what you're missing out on. You have these 2 handsome, wonderful, gracious men that are your sons, and they're here this weekend. And about 10 minutes later, I saw them all in the corner embracing. So that reunion, you know, is to me, what's the difference in a family where everybody's working the program?
I can't imagine that we would be married if we didn't have this program. I mean, and if we were, I think we'd just be really bloody looking and very, very unhappy. I mean, it gives you the opportunity to find out your part, and you're not turning the lasers on each other and trying to melt each other, but you're looking at yourself and you're being responsible and you're growing up. And 44 years ago today, we were married. That's what just sort of got me for a minute. I thought, wow, I just have no idea. First of all, Bob probably wouldn't be alive because of his alcoholism. If he were sober, I mean, I was crazy in the first 7 years of our marriage, and we were both going to AA and Al-Anon. So I can't imagine. I think it's it gives you a common language. It gives you a common goal. It gives you a definition of your God and a workbook on how to live your life. Well, it's really important.
Do you want to share something?
Yeah, I would.
Is there someone?
Is it on?
Yeah.
You know, it's really funny. As we sit here, I don't know how many are in AA or how many are in Al-Anon, but often Bill and I talk about how many people are at your meeting tonight, and our meetings are going down. And I would say just about 4, just about 5, you know. Meanwhile, in the other room, there's maybe 30, 40. Where is everybody? Where is everybody? And somebody mentioned something here about not wanting to really talk to somebody because they're enablers. They're giving them money. They're taking care of their responsibilities. People in Al-Anon, like myself, do for alcoholics what they cannot do for themselves. And I think we can also use addicts also, you know. We do for them what they can't do for themselves. We have a man, we have about 10 men that come to our group occasionally, and it's nice that they keep coming back, you know, and then they begin to talk. That's nice when we give them a chance. So, no, they really are great, and when they start working the steps. But this one man is just beside himself most of the time, and every time he comes, his daughter has just called him and asked him for a few $1,000 so she can live, you know. And he said, I can't say no, I can't say no. I said, keep coming. It works. I think the other person going to Al-Anon, as far as I'm concerned, and it worked for me, gave me an understanding of the disease that I never would have had before. I don't care if anybody in my family understands. A lot of people feel, you're still going? You're both still going? He's still going, you're still going, why? You know, there's something here you can't get anywhere else. And I believe it's a way of living that the rest of the world doesn't give us with the spiritual living. Thank you. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Bill, and I'm an alcoholic. No, don't stand where. Stand for. Anyway, I just wanted to, listening to Bernadette, listening to Barbara, talking about Lois, I just wanted to share something that Lois shared with us about her big slip in Al-Anon. It happened when Bill died. Bill was very, very sick, and a friend who had a private jet, Brinkley Smithers, flew Bill on a stretcher along with Lois and Nell Wing, who was very close. She was Bill's secretary, and the daughter that Lois never had, flew them down to the Miami Heart Institute because a doctor down there had invented some kind of a device, and they thought they could prolong Bill's life. And Lois did not want to leave Bill. She wanted to be with him. So she stayed until about 2 o'clock in the morning, and then the doctor finally said, Bill is now asleep. and he's not going to be awake until maybe later in the day, and she should go back to the hotel and get some rest, that if anything happened, he would go get her. Well, Bill died about 4 o'clock that morning, and about 7 o'clock, the doctor finally went to the hotel and knocked on the door, and when Lois came and he broke the news, she just almost collapsed. She was hysterical because she wanted to be with him when, at the most important moment of his life, when he crossed over. Because they had spent together with friends in their home many a times, where Bill got in touch with the spirit world and so forth. That's another story. But anyway, Lois was so depressed when she got home that she sat in a room in her home, which became known as the spook room, believe it or not, because she felt that Bill would come to her and that that he would somehow get in touch with her. And she sat in there for days, and she wouldn't eat, she wouldn't drink. Harry tried to bring her good friend and housekeeper tried to feed her, and she wouldn't, and she gave up on everything. And until finally Nell Wing came to her one day, and because Harry had called Nell and said she was afraid Lois was going to die. She was skin and bone as it was, and Nell came and sat with Lois and said, "You are not being fair to everything that you say you believe in. You're not being fair to Bill. You know, you and he have been carrying the message to others. Bill will continue to carry it wherever he is, and here you are sitting by yourself, depriving others of hearing the message that you have." And she came to help Lois realize that no matter what, her responsibility was to continue to carry to the families the message of recovery. And then finally Nell said to her, "And besides, we have the AA Al-Anon picnic coming up. And who's gonna help, you know, prepare?" And this was a big thing in Lois's life every year. And she finally got Lois stirred up and got her to eat and got her active again. And that was Lois's big Al-Anon slip. But when she recovered from that, she was as active, more active probably, until the day she died. And it was something that I'll never forget, because there have been times in my life, and I know there have been times in Bernadette's life, where something tragic has happened and you just want to say why, you want to give up. But God is always with us. God was always with Lois, and he helped her through Nell Wing to come to understand what her responsibility was, and that was to continue to carry the message of recovery. And she did. So I just, because of what you beautiful women have said, I just wanted to share that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any last one?
My name is Jim, and I'm an alcoholic. It's our experience in our home, when I got interested in getting sober, which took a long time, that I can remember sitting with my wife when I came home from treatment, and Betty and I looked at each other, and we've been through this rodeo many times. And I said, "Betty, you know, I have to get sober or I'm going to die of untreated alcoholism." And she looked at me, but together we decided to do something that works for us. And Betty will be very honest with you to say that for 6 months she was riding shotgun. That means she was going to AA meetings with me to keep an eye on me so that I would stay sober. But it became very evident to her, and I won't speak for her, that that wasn't going to work. So clearly I have my program, she has her program, but we have also something for us, and we together have our program as husband and wife. It's only recently that I got involved with Al-Anon, largely because I grew up in an alcoholic home, and I truly did not really appreciate the effect of someone else's alcoholism, namely my dad's, on me, in spite of my recovery. The other thing that I've recognized in AA, every AA is an Al-Anon, because every AA, in my judgment, has been affected by alcoholism. What I've seen happen today, in my experience, is it's like we versus they. And that is very, very tragic. We all share a commonality, a common purpose, and yet in our home group in Alexander City, Alabama, it's the Al-Anons meet here and the AAs meet there. And there's this sort of idea that that the Al-Anons are different. No, they don't have horns and they don't have a tail. The fact is that I was as sick with untreated Al-Anon as I was with my alcoholism in terms of the spiritual sickness. And I sponsor a lot of guys, and when I try to convey the message for those who have significant others in their life, encourage them to come to Al-Anon, it falls on deaf ears. And I don't know what to do. I'm waiting for God to give me a clue, because if it's Jim's way, I'll be carrying the message the way that Jim needs to carry it, and that's not obviously appropriate. What's important to me today is that I also recognize that the dwindling of membership, maybe if you want to call it that, I'm not so sure that there's that same sense of demoralization that maybe you enjoyed for those who have much longer sobriety than I. There's a lot of safety nets. There's the incomprehensible demoralization that I see in my professional life does not equate with an increasing number of people coming into the rooms. I will share with you, I'm a physician by profession. I cannot get my alcoholic patients, let alone the untreated Al-Anons, through suggestion to come into the rooms. If there's another way to do this, I know professionally I can't do that. As a recovered individual, I share that experience, and that too falls on deaf ears. The point that I try to raise in my commentary is that as Betty and I have been married 35, going into 36 years, and the last 6 years that I've been sober and that we've been sober together has saved our marriage. So longevity in a marital stance does not necessarily imply that we're going to remain that way. But without the 12-step program, Betty and I would not be together, and for that I know in the deepest recesses of my heart. Thanks for letting me share.
I'm Tony. I'm an alcoholic and a member of Al-Anon. I was prayed into this program. I know that. And most of you are aware that Dr. Bob was prayed into the program by the Oxford group he went to. But in the book Lois Remembers, which you all are familiar with a lot of alcoholics aren't, it states that on May 10th, 1935, when Bill and Bob got together, Lois was back at Sam Shoemaker's church. And it was Mother's Day, and she was praying with all the Al-Anon guilt that she could get had, that the reason that Bill was an alcoholic was because she'd had three miscarriages and he was not a father. And her prayer was, God, please send somebody to help my Bill. And that was the day Dr. Bob appeared.
My name is Gary Bishop, and I'm an alcoholic, but also a member of Al-Anon in the Kingsport, Tennessee area. A comment that was just made that I think there's a, my opinion, there's a difference between alcohol and drugs, and I think there's a difference between, for me at least, a difference between Alcoholics Anonymous and Al-Anon. And that came to light by having the pleasure to listen to Elsa C. At Sessions by the Sea in Ocean City, Maryland. It was the first Al-Anon I ever met, and what a way to start. And a point she made was a reference at a point in her recovery life of having an Al-Anon slip for her, and it darn near killed her. And what she had, and she said, question to the crowd, who is affected by alcoholism more, the practicing person or the family member of? And to illustrate that the alcoholic who relapses requires that chemical to begin to regress. She said in her case, her chemical was stepping away from the program, disassociating herself. Totally. And she said, you know, I became crazier than, you know, a fruit loon, that she couldn't believe how powerful and how mystifying alcoholism could become by disassociation. So she said, you know, who is the sicker person? How? And so it was a very significant point to me to remain associated. But and at the time, you know, you guys are talking about the transformational that I looked at Elsa as a grandmotherly person, and she very much reminded me of a grandmother I had at the time. And the love that she extended to everyone there listening, and like this morning, you know, comparative to people that will be here listening to the AA speakers, there's hardly anybody. And there was a lot fewer people there in the convention center. But what a message that the people missed. And I don't minimize the power that Al-Anon has and the knowledge and the experience. Nowhere in either one's literature does it say that they advocate divorce. Quite the opposite, that we're there to educate and support the person. And in our own group, we have over a half dozen families that are dealing, in my Al-Anon group, who are dealing with children of addiction. And if they did not have that support and the help from the professional, it's not the equivalent. Coming from a physician or in our area, these families have not been helped. But they've gained much more assistance and understanding through the Al-Anon program that are in the solution and not the problem. Mm-hmm. And so the butterfly, I think that a wonderful gift that I've been given is exactly what you're talking about, and the symbol of the butterfly, that I started out as a bagworm and I'm a butterfly, I feel today. and if it hadn't have been for the programs of Al-Anon and AA, in their own respective ways, I would not have seen and been able to touch and hear the presence of God in my understanding. And man, that's awesome. You know, again, I want, when I grow up, I want hair like you.
Thank you, everybody, for participating in the meeting today. I thank y'all for that. To have wonderful lunch or brunch or whatever you'll have, 2:00. We'll be back in here for the gift of family recovery, and you will hear from Dave and Polly P., Bill and Bernadette B., Ralph and Linda. And then tonight, 8:30 is Clancy, something he's calling Seconds and Inches, and we'll see what that is all about. But I know he's going to talk about some of the early formations of Alcoholics Anonymous. And then a very special treat at 10:00 tonight. Bill is going to be sharing some commentary and screening When Love Is Not Enough, the Lois Wilson story. If you've not seen the film, please stay for that. Let's close with the Lord's Prayer.
Come on out into the light. First, nothing will seem right. The darkness that surrounded you for so long is gone. A new day has come to shine. Butterfly, spread your wings. You will fly. I will sing. We will be who we were meant to be now that we have opened up our wings. And in your struggles to break free lies the greatest irony. Cause the pain that you endured along the way made you stronger than you ever would have been.
The significance of